Hello, you're listening to the Charles-Bonnet Syndrome Podcast. My name is Shimon Foy, and I have a special guest today. His name is Chris Wilston. Chris is from the UK, and I'll let him explain a little bit about himself shortly. So how are you doing today, Chris?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I appreciate you taking the time to be here, and I really look forward to this conversation.
Oh, thanks for the invite. It's great to be here.
So can you tell the people a little bit about what you do for the visually impaired?
Certainly, yeah. I work for an organization called Kent Association for the Blind. So that's a geographic charity that supports visually impaired people in the county of Kent and some of London as well. We have quite a big staff group, amongst which we have rehabilitation officers, we have assistive technology workers, guide communicators, we have eye clinic liaison officers, and counsellors. They're the main sort of parts to the organisation. And I look after the counselling team and the eye clinic liaison officers.
Sounds like a pretty big organisation, or at least a lot of moving pieces that you are part of. Can you talk a little bit about getting involved with the visually impaired? Have you always assisted them? How long have you been doing this work to help the visually impaired?
I've been with the organisation for about 15 years now. And started as a volunteer, actually. I had some issues of my own with my sight many years ago, and it just sparked an interest in me when I was starting to look for work again and get back out amongst the workplace looking for employment. I decided to do some volunteering first, and I volunteered for Kent Association for the Blind, and that led to a part-time job many years ago, and has led me to this point now. So I've been interested in this field for a very long time.
That is a long time, 15 years. Would you be comfortable sharing a little bit about your own vision challenges and some of the problems you have with your eyesight?
Yeah, sure. I think it was probably in 2005 or so, something like that, long time ago. I had both my corneas replaced, transplanted due to some problems, and it left me with partial sight. So I had a brilliant care from the hospital team that I was under. But unfortunately, one of my eyes doesn't work at all now, and the other one works when it feels like it. So I had partial sight in one eye. And it's just, I suppose, for me, it almost seemed like a natural thing to look for work for an organization that supported people with sight impairment. I'd been in corporate before that and, you know, climbing the greasy pole, and actually realized that wasn't what I wanted to do. So I was very fortunate in the way things worked out for me. And in some ways, I feel that the sight problems I had and have actually led me to do a job I really, really enjoy. So in some ways, there was some good fortune about it.
I just came from church today, and the message was talking about your mindset and how you have to think positively, and it makes a big difference. And the pastor was even talking about the placebo effect, and he went on to say a lot of things about how during World War II, they ran out of morphine and they started giving people some saline, and the soldiers must have thought that it was morphine, and they said, "Hey, I feel better." And it was the placebo effect. So they were saying a positive mindset really can make a big difference. So that's really good to think like that, because I know a lot of people who they face trauma, and then they will start an organization or they will go on to help people. So thank you for speaking on that. Can you tell me when you first heard about Charles-Bonnet syndrome?
Yeah, it must have been when I got a job as an eye clinic liaison officer. If I can explain a little bit about what that is. In the UK, we have this term, the eye clinic liaison officer. They're people they're non-medical staff who work in hospital eye services, and they're at the front line supporting patients who are going through that process to offer emotional and practical support. And that could be a range of issues. So it could be about financial support, people perhaps who are struggling with housing, employment. Some people we know, you know, the employers perhaps don't look so favorably if they develop sight problems and they need some support with that. So the eye clinic liaison officers, we call them ECLOs, just for brevity. They're there to support those people. And I did that job for many years, and it was great. It's such an enjoyable job. And that's when I first came across Charles Bonnet. I was absolutely fascinated by it. It led me to, my research took me to Judith and Esme's Umbrella, which had recently been formed. I think she started that in 2015. So I probably came across her about then or the year after, I think. And I couldn't believe it. You know, when I learned more about what Charles Bonnet syndrome is, and it really just sparked an interest. And I was very keen to make sure that the awareness was there in the eye clinics amongst the doctors. There's a lot of doctors who at the time didn't feel comfortable talking about it. And I think that's been spoken about in some of your other podcasts, actually. I think Jonathan Ward mentioned it as well. Jonathan and I know each other from way back as well. Jonathan used to work for Kent Association for the Blind. So, yeah. And so the more I learned about it, the more interested I got, and I was just keen to support as many people as I could, really. That's how the interest started when I was working in the hospital eye clinics.
And it's interesting because some doctors don't know about it, but you said something that's interesting. You said some doctors don't want to talk about it. So they may know about it, but not be comfortable talking about it. And we just interviewed a doctor. I haven't released the episode yet, but it seems like, not saying this is the case with him, but it seems like when doctors don't have a pill that they can give or treatment that they can give or really much that they can do, it puts them in an uncomfortable place. And it's why Charles Bonnet syndrome is maybe not really known about. And also the fact that it affects people that are primarily older, although it can affect anyone. And sometimes when people are older, they will kind of say, oh, well, they're just old, or they're senile, or maybe they have early onset dementia or something like that.
So yeah, I think things are improving. I have to say that as well. I'm going back sort of 10 years probably or so. And I think things are better now. There is more awareness because a lot of the work that Judith's done has spread the word, and people are perhaps starting to feel more comfortable about it. Now we understand a bit more about it, about what it is, and that it's not a mental health condition, then I think we must never stop in encouraging doctors to talk about this. And I believe there's a new, I think Judith mentioned this actually. She talked about a certificate of vision impairment when people are registered as either sight impaired or severely sight impaired, what we used to call partially sighted or blind. And there's a new version of that under consideration at the moment, which actually does mention Charles Bonnet for the first time. So that's really, really positive. So all those things are happening, which is great. And it encourages the conversation, and we must open it up. People shouldn't be afraid to talk about it.
You said that you spread the word to the people that you work with about Charles Bonnet syndrome. How do you do that? Is it like a formal education, or is it informal to let them know about this condition?
We have in our organization, prior to COVID and lockdowns and things, we would have what we call a CPD day, Continuous Professional Development Day, and invite different speakers in about a range of topics. And I invited Judith along one day to talk to our rehabilitation officers, they're the people who go into people's homes and help with visual rehabilitation. So cooking skills, mobility, that kind of thing. So Judith came to one of our sessions there and spoke at length about Charles Bonnet and Esme's Umbrella. And I think our organization is very forward thinking about supporting people with CBS. And so, yeah, it's a constant sort of education, really, keeping up to date with the research we've got. There's some new research that came out fairly recently, I believe. And just making sure that people are aware that there is other support out there, you know, to the point where we have a CBS champion in our ranks. One of the guys who works for me is our CBS champion. So he's really up to speed, and we can refer people to him if they want to have a chat about what they're experiencing, how they're feeling. and he'll listen and talk about the distraction techniques that have been spoken about on previous podcasts that you've done, and other forms of support, including counselling as well. So we try and keep on top of the information and make sure everybody's aware. We have leaflets about Charles Bonnet syndrome that we can give out to people, and just really to encourage that conversation.
I love that, a CBS champion. I never heard of that, and that's something that is so needed. If you don't mind me asking, how long have you had a CBS champion?
We started that during the lockdown. Judith alluded to this, that a lot of people were reporting that CBS got worse during the lockdowns, that the hallucinations became more vivid, more scary, and things like that. So we started, during that period, we started some online support groups for people who could come along and discuss their Charles Bonnet syndrome. After COVID and when things had started to open up a little bit, those groups, they weren't terribly well attended, which is fine. They were still there. But because of that, we decided to channel the resource into having this CBS champion instead. So rather than having a weekly setup meeting that perhaps wouldn't be terribly well attended, we had a CBS champion that we can point the people to. And I'd also spoken to Jonathan Ward, who you was a guest of yours a few weeks ago, who told me that anybody who wanted to join his CBS telephone support group could do so. So we would refer people into his group as well. So there's two kind of avenues we're following there. And also, of course, there's the ESMA's umbrella and the helpline on there, you know, as well, if people need that.
It's great to have such a collaborative effort like that, because you mentioned Jonathan, you mentioned Judith, and I think about the old African proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So it really takes a group, or it takes a village. So that's so important that you all work together instead of against each other.
I think it's really important, because we know that not enough people are aware of Charles Bonnet. So anything we can do collaboratively that reaches a wider audience has got to be beneficial. And so it's you know, Judith is having her CBS day in a couple of weeks' time, I think, in Manchester, which is great. It's going to spread the word again. But I think collaboration is absolutely key. Quite often, I think that some sight loss charities can work in silos a little bit sometimes. And I'm all for collaboration and working together. And we're here to support people. That's what we do. So let's do it the best way we can, you know.
That's so great. I'm curious, what are some ways that you comfort your patients or people that you deal with when they're having some Charles Bonnet issues or some situations like that?
I think a lot of it's education. When I was based in the hospital eye clinic, people, once they knew what it was, that was often the start. You could almost see a weight lifted from them, beginning to understand what was going on was just huge in itself. And also being able to explain that to loved ones, to family, to carers, to partners, whatever. Because I think quite often people will, and we know people will suffer in silence because they don't want to talk to people about what they're seeing. So again, this education for others around, you know, caregivers and that kind of thing is really important. So that's, to me, that was really crucial. And then making sure that, I guess, that people were comfortable in giving them a safe space to talk about what their experiences were, no matter how trivial they might seem to them. A lot of people might dismiss what they were seeing. But I think education is the key, isn't it, really? We need to get the message out there as much as we can, really.
What would you say to a caregiver that may be listening to this and having a difficult time supporting a loved one of theirs?
There's a lot of support now. In the UK particularly, we've got ESMA's umbrella, and lots of local sight loss charities will offer some support. There's helplines available. So I think it's about trying your best to understand what your loved one might be experiencing, or the person you're looking after might be experiencing. Educate yourself in what it is. It can be very, very difficult to comprehend, I think, for somebody. I remember speaking to an elderly couple in the hospital once, and the lady was describing in great detail what she saw out of her backyard, the windows to her backyard, and that her husband was very, very dismissive of it. So we actually at one point they almost started having an argument in the eye clinic in front of me. So I tried to calm the situation down, and you know, by explaining that, yeah, this was real to her, this was happening for her. And then so we started on this kind of, I met them quite regularly. She had to come in, she had macular degeneration, so she was in fairly regularly for injections. And I made sure I spoke to them each time they came in, see how things were. Was the understanding better? And was the husband being a bit more patient and that kind of thing, you know? So I think it's just look for the resources are out. There's loads of resources on ESMA's Umbrella's website. And with the eye clinic liaison officers, if people are going through that process, then there are avenues of support. Just look for them, educate yourself, and ask, you know, ask somebody. Somebody will know.
Thank you for saying that. And I was thinking that having a therapist or a psychologist to talk to if you're having difficult times in your own personal life or navigating a relationship or even as a caregiver could be helpful. And if you talk to a therapist and they're unaware of Charles-Bonnet syndrome, maybe educate them. Print something out from ESMA's Umbrella's website and take it to them or somewhere else. Give them a little video from YouTube. And then once they learn about that, they could take the techniques that they know for helping people cope with difficult situations, and they can start to apply it to the Charles-Bonnet somewhat. So that's something that comes to my mind too.
Yeah, absolutely. We've found out recently with our counselling service that we know for some people that counselling has been very beneficial in terms of managing Charles-Bonnet syndrome. And in one instance, somebody's reported that their CBS hallucinations have stopped. So, which is incredible.
That's amazing. One thing, and Dr. Gary Cusick, he's one of like the leaders in America on research, and he has a weekly support group. He actually said that there's research that says that cognitive behavioral therapy can actually help, and that reframes the way you think about something. And going back to what we were saying earlier, if you think about something differently, the thing will actually change. And it's weird because the thing doesn't necessarily have to change, but your thinking about it changes, and that changes the thing. So it's really amazing how the mind is, and positive thinking, and just reaching out, like you said, for help. Even if you can't afford a therapist, I mean, I think the UK is different than America, where some things are free. I don't know if that includes therapists, but I know medical is different. But there's got to be a friend that you can reach out to, or somebody or something, whether even if it's at a church or an organization. They even have caregiver support groups. And I even attend some of those because it can be challenging. No matter what condition your loved one has, it can be challenging to support them along the way. I'm curious, so do you actually, so if someone needs some help and they're in Kent or they're in the UK, what is the process for them to get some assistance, not just with Charles-Bonnet, but with visual assistance in general, like using a cane, or what are some of the kind of services that your organization provides for people?
Yeah, we have a team of, as I mentioned, rehabilitation officers. So that's rehabilitation officer of visual impairment. A lot of the sight loss charities in the UK, the smaller ones, work in geographical areas. So our area in Kent, down in the southeast of the UK there, we will support, I think we support about 12, we've got about 12,500 people on our books who have access to our services, which are all free at the point of delivery, though. So the rehabilitation counselling we offer free of charge to people as well. The assistive technology support as well, that's free. And we put the eye clinic liaison officers in as well. There's no charge for their services. So anybody who lives in our area who is struggling or has difficulty with a visual impairment is able to contact us for support, and we will make assessments with them for them and find out what support they need, whether that's maybe a home visit. For a lot of people will struggle with some very, you know, could be making a cup of tea, say, from making the drink, hot drink, you know, kettles and boiling pans and things can be quite dangerous with reduced vision, of course. So we can educate people on how to do things like that safely. And from there, people will often want to use a long cane. So we can offer training on long cane use as well. So there's a range of services really for people in this area, in the area that I work in, that are available to them.
So if anyone wanted to contact you or your organization, is there like a website they can go to?
Yeah, we have a website, www.kab.org.uk. And there's loads of information on there about all our services, including Charles Bonnet and support groups and that kind of thing as well. So
if someone's listening to this and they actually have Charles Bonnet syndrome themselves and they're struggling, what advice would you give them?
I suppose don't be afraid. It sounds trite almost, but we understand, we're starting to understand so much more about Charles Bonnet, and do reach out for support. There are lots of avenues of support now. If you know, the internet's fantastic with the resources available there. Head to Esme's Umbrella's website. I think it's charlesbonnetsyndrome.uk. It's a great place to start. Speak to your iClinic liaison officer if you're going through that process. Ring your local sight loss charity wherever you live in the UK. They'll have information, or they'll be able to signpost you to areas of support. And as we've said earlier, I think the more people that we get talking about this, the better. The education is key. So yeah, just reach out for that support. There's more and more out there now. And with people like Judith at the helm, you know, people are very well served by her.
So what are some success stories that you can share? Like you mentioned earlier, you said there's someone that you knew that had Charles Bonnet syndrome and they were able to speak with a therapist, and then the Charles Bonnet syndrome actually went away as a result of talk therapy. Are there any other kind of success stories you can share with people that you've come across or that you've helped through your organization?
Yeah, there was one gentleman who came to the support groups, the phone support groups when we were running those, and was getting very, very vivid and disturbing hallucinations. And after a few weeks of attending the support group, he reported that his hallucinations had started to diminish in frequency and severity, and they were more manageable. And this was just in a sort of peer group setting. So that was really encouraging. And he got to a point, he actually left the group of his own accord. He obviously felt he was managing well enough, but it was a really lovely story, actually. And what he described when he first joined were pretty horrific images. But it was lovely to see the difference in him, actually, and he was a bit calmer. One of the other ones that springs to mind was our CBS champion that I spoke to. We do know that we're not medically qualified, so we don't give medical advice to anyone, but we are aware that certain medications can exacerbate Charles Bonnet syndrome. And somebody who went to see our CBS champion was on one of the medications that we know that can make things worse. So it was suggested that she might want to go and visit her GP, her general practitioner, family doctor, for advice on that. And within about, I think, a month or so, she had changed the medications, had a chat with the doctor, changed the medications, and her Charles Bonnet syndrome had abated a great deal. So, you know, just things like that. We haven't touched on that, but the medication is key here. And there are even some eye drops that can exacerbate Charles Bonnet. So for anybody who is experiencing it, that's another thing to do, is to get your meds checked. If you're on medication for, I can't remember the full list, but just get your GP, your family doctor, to check the medications you're on, because it can make a difference. I know at least 4 or 5 people for whom that's worked, that's been a success. So, you know, it's great when you hear stories like that, because people aren't aware. This is another one of the points about education, isn't it? People aren't aware that medications can make a difference and make the Charles Bonnet worse. So that's it's great when we hear stories like that, certainly.
That's actually good to hear, because that goes to show me that there's no one way to deal with Charles Bonnet or to get relief from Charles Bonnet, if that's even possible. And you spoke about someone who talk therapy helped, and then someone else changing their medicine helped. And just to hear different stories to know that it's possible. And what works for one doesn't work for another, but it's different ways to go about trying to cope with this and to deal with it. So thank you for sharing those different ways.
No, it's fine. And you know, something just occurred to me as well. I remember during the lockdowns, when all the offices were closed, I was answering the phones one day. The office phone was diverted to me, and this gentleman phoned up, and when he'd established who he was talking to, and he said, "This might sound like a weird question, but I keep seeing these things in front of my eyes." I think he was describing the patterns, symmetrical patterns and colours and things like that. He said, "I know they're not there. I know I can't see." So, you know, he said, "I know they're not there, but they're just weird." So we had a chat, and I said to him, "I'm not a doctor. This isn't medical advice at all. This sounds very much like a condition called Charles Bonnet syndrome." I said, "But I can't say for certain. You know, you need to check," and I explained you need to talk to a doctor and that kind of thing. But even that, giving that a name, he perked up immediately, and he said, "Oh, well, that's brilliant. Oh, so it is a thing. It's something." And I said, "Possibly, you know, I'm not telling you it is, but go and get this checked." And he went away, he said, "Oh, no, that's right," and went away happy and did some research, you know. So even that, just naming it, made a huge difference to this chap.
Well, that's amazing. And that's how the way that I found out about Charles Bonnet syndrome is I actually typed hallucinations into Google, and then there was a list of things that can cause hallucinations, and one of them was Charles Bonnet syndrome. And I said, "What is Charles Bonnet syndrome?" So then I did some more Googling, and I went to YouTube, and I saw some videos. And when I listened to the people explain what they were experiencing and doctors explain what it was, I said, "Wow, this sounds like this is affecting one of my loved ones." And then I brought it to them, and they eventually said, "Yeah, I think that's the case. That's the short version of it." So it's good that we have things like Wikipedia and different other ways out there where you can find some research. And even you can maybe speak to Siri or Alexa if you have a visual impairment, or reach out to someone in a support group like or an organization like yourself. So that's really good that they actually have phone calls that come to you. So these phone calls, are they the same now that the lockdown is no longer in place, or was this a unique situation? Like, was these like emergency support calls where people called if they were like in crisis, or was it just informational calls?
This was just an information call, actually. So one of our offices, we have 3 main offices in our organization, and I was looking after the phones that they were diverted to me. Just, we did a kind of rota thing during the lockdown, so everybody got a share. It's not a job I normally do, but it was really interesting, actually. And yeah, he was just ringing up for some information, and yeah, went away with lots, actually, and did some research, and I haven't heard from him since. I don't know if he's been in touch with us again. I'm not sure, but it was great that I was able to certainly signpost him to some further support and information about what it might be. And I think your point as well was really interesting about, you know, you type in hallucinations into a search engine and lots of different things come up. And I guess it's important to make that point that there are other medical conditions that give that make people hallucinate, but the nature of Charles Bonnet with the silent, the fact that they're silent is really key here, that there's no smell, there's no odor, there's no sound, it's just vision, visual hallucinations. But it's certainly, for anybody who's experiencing anything like that, just talk to a doctor is really the key, isn't it? Just to establish exactly the reason for the hallucination.
Yeah, and I'll say just what you said. I'm not a medical doctor or a medical professional, so that's definitely a point that I want to make. But another thing I'll add on to what you just said about Charles Bonnet syndrome being silent hallucinations. Also, in order to have Charles Bonnet syndrome, you have to have vision loss, and usually significant vision loss, or be blind. So that's something that if you are experiencing severe vision loss, or maybe you're completely blind and you're seeing patterns or spots, or you're even seeing vivid hallucinations like people or objects, then you should at least consider that. Now, obviously, you have to go to a doctor and you have to go through the process of seeing what else it could be and what medicines you're taking, but that's something that you could consider. And that's one good thing about, not good, but that's one thing, because some conditions are very difficult to even kind of comprehend or to begin to think why one person has it and one doesn't. That's the case for Charles Bonnet, because even doctors don't know why one person that's blind has it and one person that's blind doesn't. But at least you know that if you have a severe vision loss and you're experiencing some of these things, you have to at least consider Charles Bonnet syndrome.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah. Our lead counselor, she's very, we'd love to do more research into causes. I know there is some going on at various places in the UK at the moment, but she's got some theories about possibly the nature of Charles Bonnet and whether there's a link to past trauma and traumatic events and that kind of thing. Does that play a part? So there's so much we don't know, and it'd be really interesting to find out. Hopefully we will get there at some point, but it's the, as Judith explained, the money for research is hard to come by, and it's expensive to do it, but there's lots of unanswered questions, I think.
So if there was a medical professional that was listening to this podcast and maybe they aren't familiar with Charles Bonnet syndrome or just know a little bit about it, is there anything you would like to share with them?
Gosh, well, if anyone who's interested, I'd first signpost them to Judith, actually. I know that I didn't realize that Professor Fitch had retired. Dominic Fitch, who was the...
Yeah, I was kind of sad to hear that. And even Judith was, but I guess he's put in his time and he needed a, you know, everybody deserves a little bit of retirement after eventually.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. So I know Judith's on the lookout for somebody to pick up the baton there. But yeah, I mean, any medical professional who's interested in Charles Bonnet, get in touch with me or Judith if you want to talk about it. I mean, I was chatting to a lady who's doing a PhD recently, and she's doing some research into Charles Bonnet, and I had a chat with her. So there's lots of people out there who are interested in research. And so, yeah, let's continue this conversation, I think. But with our counselling team, we make sure that they're very well versed in Charles Bonnet. So some of those, a lot of the counsellors we have don't have a vision impairment, but we make sure they're aware of what Charles Bonnet is so they can have that conversation with their clients. If that comes into the conversation, they understand what it is. So we think that's a really positive move.
I'm really grateful for what you're doing, what Jonathan's doing, what Judith is doing, Dominic Fitch, Dr. Cusick. There's so many people that are doing a lot of things. Even this podcast, we're trying to do a small part of just bringing awareness, bringing people together. And one thing that came to my mind is I wanted to have a place where everybody can go for Charles Bonnet syndrome. I didn't want one podcast for people with Charles Bonnet syndrome and one podcast for caregivers and one podcast for medical professionals. I just kind of wanted a holistic view and a place where everybody can just come and share and get some information. So hopefully this is doing that.
I think it's brilliant what the work you're doing. It's fantastic. And I certainly encourage everyone I know to listen to your series as well. It's really interesting and brilliant that you're doing it. I think the more people that get involved with supporting people with Charles Bonnet syndrome, the better, wherever they're from.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Is there anything you would like to say in closing?
Just thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to come on and have a chat today. It's been really, it's great to talk to you. So thank you so much. Just if anybody is interested in getting in touch for a chat with me, I'll be happy to have a chat. This is a passion of mine and something that I'm really keen to support people as much as possible with. So they can contact me through the Kent Association for the Blind website and be happy to have a chat. But let's spread the word. Let's educate. Let's get doctors talking a bit more about it as well.
Okay. And is it okay if I put your email in the show notes in case anybody wants to send you a message or something?
Yeah, absolutely fine. Yeah, no problem at all.
Okay, I'll definitely do that. And this was a great interview. Thank you for sharing your time and your perspective and for all of the things that you do for the blind and visually impaired in your community and throughout the UK and soon to be around the world because more people are knowing and we all got to collaborate, I believe, globally. I mean, it starts at home, but eventually we all got to connect the dots and just get the message out there. So I appreciate
Absolutely. That. Thank you very much.